From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Well, thanks very much, FSN. How you doing, by the way? It's Monday, the 30th of March. That's right, 2020. And it's great to be back with you. How you doing? Are you well? Have you had a good Monday thus far? It is the BBC, even. The BBG, not the BBC. Yeah, I've been away for a while. The BBG, not the BBC, broadcasting around the world on multiple platforms right now. Thanks for your company. John Rappaport will join the programme a little bit later on. In the meantime, as usual, you can contact the programme by tweeting it. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. And I do look forward to hearing from you today. I'm sure you've got plenty of opinions on lockdown UK or lockdown USA or lockdown Ireland or wherever you happen to be today. All right. I'm delighted to be back, by the way. I really am. Thanks for the kind words and all of that today. I really appreciate them. Welcome to your Richie Allen radio show.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, it is. It's me. I'm giving you the Twitter details and all the rest of it. How are you feeling? Are you experiencing illness? Do you want to tell me about that? Do you want to let me know? Is anybody you know suffering from this coronavirus or COVID-19? Do get in touch, as I said, through Twitter and let me know. Just to remind you, if you want to come on this programme tomorrow, I should have said if you want to come on this programme to tell me what you think of this lockdown, these times, you can do so tomorrow because there will be a phone-in on the programme tomorrow. I think tomorrow. Maybe Wednesday, but it's looking very much like tomorrow anyway. I'll tell you more about that as we go along today. Very good. Yeah. And it's a strange one for me because the coverage of this virus is total, isn't it? You have to look very, very hard for any other news stories. And they generally tend to be entertainment stories. There isn't anything else going on. Cold and dark all day today. Unseasonably cold the last couple of days. And Salford's streets are deserted. I did say, didn't I, on social media a few days ago that I was delighted to see so many Salfordians in the parks around here and ignoring the advice they were being given by their government. But anyway, I spoke too soon because Salfordians are certainly observing the lockdown. Jogging I was today. I'm not quite running yet. I'm jogging. Jogging through the streets of Salford. They are deserted. The lockdown is being obeyed. So what's it like where you are? Tell me. Tweet me and tell me. I will be reading your tweets out as we go along. As I said, John Rappaport, terrific writer and broadcaster on the programme at the top, around about the top of the hour. NoMoreFakeNews.com is John's website. I'm sure you know that already. And I want to remind you several times about the phone in. Yes, I'll do that again later on. And for the moment, just for the moment, there won't be any morning streams on YouTube. There isn't any reason. There's no logic to doing live streams in the morning talking about coronavirus and then coming back and doing the monologue segment of this programme in the early evening and doing the same thing. So for the moment, there won't be any morning stream. For the moment, I'm very whimsical, me. You know, I could decide during the week, oh, I feel like coming onto YouTube. But the Richie Allen radio show, the regular radio show, which you're listening to now, will be uploaded to YouTube after every live show, as it will be uploaded to Podomatic and iTunes and everything else, all the other places. Coming up for 7 minutes past the hour, easing our way back. When I say hour, there is no hour. It's the royal hour. It's me easing my way back to you and to this radio program. So I'm going to kick off today's show with a tune. Why not? So here's a Soul Asylum on your Richie Allen radio show. Welcome to Monday's program. Yeah, what a tune. Soul Asylum, Runaway Train on the Richie Allen radio show. 11 minutes past five it is. This Monday. And don't just tweet me with what's going on in your area. Do that by all means, but if you've got an opinion on what you think is really going on, I do want to hear it. Like I said, there's a phone-in imminent, but I do want to hear it. Tony is in a village just outside Colchester. How you, Tony? So many self-policers on the wife's Facebook, it is incredible, Richie, says Tony. One woman asked if runners can use the fields, not the roads. Yes, there's no prison quite like the one you construct for yourself. The powers that be, the hidden hand, the elite, we give them many names. They are rubbing their hands gleefully, aren't they, at the compliance. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. I've been listening to the radio today. The other radio. There's only this radio, really, in my life. But I do listen to the radio stations locally and nationally, as you know. So we'll hear from one or two people about the self-policing and the snitching a little bit later on. Hi to Liz Jones. Hi, Liz. Hi to David Stanford. David says, for some reason, the comments are jumping away from me there. Jumping away from me on Twitter there. David says, where's that comment gone, David? The bleak streets are even more bleak, says David. Even the tumbleweed are socially distancing. Boom, boom, boom. Dish. Very good. Very good. I like that. I like that. I like that. Keep them coming. Get your coat. Let's scroll on down. Hi to Sean Hinchcliffe. Putting this out there, Richie, says Sean, my ex-mother-in-law, who's over 70, was taken into hospital yesterday unrelated to coronavirus. They put do not resuscitate on her notes against family wishes before the daughter left for the last time, as now no visitors are allowed. Sean, that's startling. Ex-mother-in-law, over 70, taken to hospital, not related to COVID-19. They put do not resuscitate on her notes against the family wishes before the daughter left for the last time, as now no visitors are allowed. Did the mum, did the ex-mum-in-law herself declare that she did not want to be resuscitated if she was to be comatose? That's the question, Sean. That's very interesting. Thanks very much for sharing that with me. Hi to Charlotte. How you doing, Charlotte? Hi to Richard Kinsett. How you doing, Richard? Hi to Shona. I mentioned Shona yesterday. Long time listener listening in Africa. It's dead this side of the world, South Africa. It's dead, Richie, in sunny South Africa. Very few cars around. Did see a WhatsApp showing the four corners of a street where the residents were having a... What were they having? A barbecue, is it, alongside the road? Very funny to see that. Haven't been out yet, but I will go out, says Shona. Thanks, Shona. Hi to Trevor, who says we should all regender as non-binary somethings, as apparently the coronavirus only affects males and females. Yes, why not? A night to Fitzdragon. How you doing, Fitzdragon? I used to think Athol, Massachusetts, was bad, but at least that has no E on the end, so it can be pronounced differently, says Fitzdragon. Thanks, Fitz, for the tweet. Hi to Patrick Vadine as well, and to everybody else who's chatting away. Hi to Stuart, otherwise known as These Are The Damned. And David Kona is listening live to the programme this afternoon, and he's quite happy to be in a position to do that. That humbles me, David. Thank you very much indeed. So let's get on with it then. The virus. Few interesting stories on bbc.co.uk. Mothers will be told, well, are being told even, in New York City, that they'll be, excuse me, say it right, Richie. Mothers-to-be, expecting mothers, are being told they'll have to give birth alone, that the dads can't come to the hospital. And that's to help prevent the spread of coronavirus. And Sky News ran some video today of a very upset young woman who was very upset that her other half, her fella, won't be in the delivery room to take his place there to watch as the baby emerges into the world. So that's advice being given to people. They're being told you can't, dads-to-be can't be in the waiting room. Sorry, can't be in the delivery room. Can't even be in the waiting room. Stay away from the hospital. Speaking of hospitals, The US Navy ship Comfort. That's the name of the ship. Comfort. It's a hospital ship. It arrives in New York City this afternoon, apparently to help ease pressure on hospitals. There's some wonderful shots of the US Navy ship Comfort arriving in New York City, arriving in the harbour. And in New York City, the Samaritans have erected tent hospitals in Central Park. It's all getting a bit mad. And the reason I say that is because I know you are aware that there are many videos doing the rounds, and they are being shared and shared and shared and shared on Twitter especially. Excuse me, many videos from all over the world of purportedly, seemingly, very quiet and peaceful hospitals. Now, I don't know anything about the people who have filmed these hospitals or how genuine these videos are. I don't know. I'm not saying they're not genuine now. Calm down. Be Jesus. But I don't know. These videos are claiming that they are evidence of local hospitals being very quiet and not being overrun with COVID-19 patients. So I don't know. The video makers are claiming that exaggeration is going on big time. And these videos, there are many of them. Some of them, one of them from Ireland, one from Portugal, there's one from Phoenix, Arizona. There's one from Germany, which is getting a lot of views as well. I think YouTube took it down even. Alleging that the hospitals are not as busy as the media is making out they are. So we'll come to more on hospitals and temporary hospitals in a minute. I've got a few things to tell you. Easter eggs. Yes, Easter eggs. Easter is imminent. I think Easter is a week on Sunday, right? Am I wrong? I'm always wrong. Is it a fortnight on Sunday? Is it? No, it's Sunday week, right? Sunday week, Easter, when we celebrate the resurrection of our Lord and Saviour, Jesus Christ. Of course, Easter Sunday. Sunday week, yes, 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 just under 2 weeks away. Well, according to the BBC, that's the website bbc.co.uk, convenience stores selling Easter eggs are facing interference from heavy-handed officials. And these officials are seemingly trying to restrict the range of goods that shops can sell under coronavirus rules. This is according to a trade body called the Association of Convenience Stores. Heavy-handed police men and women are going into convenience stores and are telling convenience stores, stop selling the bloody Easter eggs! Because they are non-essential items, apparently. So the Association of Convenience Stores has blamed overzealous enforcement and misreading of the rules, and it is encouraging its members to carry on selling the full range of goods. Yes, I know, I know, I know, I know. And thanks to RT for this bit of audio. The police in Neath, Port Talbot. There's a quiz question for you today, dear listener. Where is Neath, Port Talbot? Don't look it up using Wikipedia, you lazy bastard. You should know your geography. Where's Neath, Port Talbot? Well, apparently, it's become wonderfully dystopian there. They're sending up drones, the little drones with the four whirling blades, these little drones, and the drones have loudspeakers on them, and they are telling people, well, you've guessed it, to stay at home. You couldn't make it up. This is genuine.
This is a message from Neath Port Talbot Council. Please follow the government rules at this time. You must stay home. Only be outside for food, for health reasons, for exercise, alone or with members of your household, or if you're an essential key worker. Stay 2 meters away from other people and wash your hands as soon as you get home. For the latest accurate information from Neath Port Talbot Council, visit npt.gov.uk. Stay home. Protect our NHS. Save lives. This is a message from Neath Port Talbot Council. Please follow the government rules at this time.
Wow. That's genuine, that. Like I said earlier on, wonderfully dystopian. We were hearing these stories from France. You know, the other half is French, and they've had these drones in France, and in the east of France, in the north of the country, particularly warning people, apparently a bit more heavy-handed in the language being used there. How lovely. How wonderful. And Robert Dingwall. Lovely surname, Robert. By the way, Neath, Port Talbot, is in Wales. In case you have to look it up. Robert Dingwall is a professor of social sciences at Nottingham University. Why is he in the news? Well, he has said today, and I think he's probably onto something here, he says that coronavirus, this particular crisis we are navigating at the moment, he reckons it will make handshakes and hugs extinct.
What kind of fuckery is this?
Yes, very good article in The Independent. I think it was picked up by The Mail as well. This guy says in the near future, because of the impact coronavirus has had on the nation's psyche, people will no longer shake each other's hand in public by way of greeting, and hugs will be right out, apparently. Changing our behaviour and our instincts into the future. So the hospitals then, 23 minutes past five. Told you about the US Navy hospital ship pulling up in New York Harbour, the US Navy ship Comfort, the Samaritan tents in the park, Central Park. And we've got these Nightingale hospitals here. Temporary hospitals being erected in buildings, you know, in public buildings. It's been proposed that the Manchester Arena, which is a massive music venue in Manchester, one of the biggest indoor arenas in the world, is apparently going to be fitted out to deal with the overspill from Greater Manchester's hospitals. Apparently. Here's a Scottish First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon. She says the Scottish Exhibition Centre will be used as a hospital, possibly, she says. Nicola Sturgeon.
And I can confirm today that following exploratory work over last week and the weekend, we have now taken the decision to start work on turning the Scottish Exhibition Centre in Glasgow into a temporary NHS hospital. If needed, we expect that the hospital could become operational within a fortnight from now. Initially, it will provide us with 300 additional beds, but ultimately it could have capacity for more than 1,000 patients. It is worth, and indeed it is important, to be clear that we might not need to use the exhibition centre. There are currently approximately 13,000 beds in NHS hospitals across Scotland, and using those, NHS boards are working to ensure at least 3,000 beds are available for COVID-19 patients within our existing hospital network.
Nicola Sturgeon, Scotland's First Minister. Now, Simon Stephens is the Chief Executive of NHS England. He was at Excel in London, which I believe is being turned into a Nightingale hospital. And he reckons, does Simon Stephens, the Chief Exec of NHS England, he reckons there are 9,000 COVID-19 patients in hospital in the UK right now. Here he is.
Today there are over 9,000 positive coronavirus patients in hospitals across England, and we know that number is only going to increase. That's why what you see here is a mass mobilisation taking place right across the country, but also at these new Nightingale hospitals. This has been an extraordinary team effort on the part of nurses and doctors and therapists and pharmacists across London, but also volunteers and paramedics and people returning to help. And when these services are needed, they will be available beginning later this week. And because this is a global health emergency, we're actually seeing similar types of hospitals being established in Berlin and Madrid and New York.
Will you be stretching your staff too much by moving people here and leaving other hospitals short-staffed?
The whole of the NHS is freeing up hospital beds for coronavirus patients. We've got 9,000 people across the country who are in a hospital right now, and we know that number is bound to increase. That's why we're also creating this extra capacity to look after patients, staffed by health service professionals, but also by those who are returning to help. 20,000 nurses and doctors have come back to help, as well as paramedics and volunteers from all walks of life.
Can you give any indication of how much staff sickness is affecting the NHS and people needing to self-isolate?
NHS staff are affected just like people across the country as a whole. And so we are seeing staff who are doing the right thing and having to self-isolate at home. That's one of the reasons why it's so important that we are ramping up staff testing. But it's also why it's so vital that all of us take the medical advice and stay at home. That will reduce the infections and reduce the need for services such as this new Nightingale Hospital.
Simon Stephens there. Now, a number of you are commenting on hospitals there, so I'm going to read out some of your tweets there. It is at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. If you're new to the programme, welcome to programme. Hi to Peter McTwowheels. Peter, thanks for tweeting that to me. I've retweeted it. Cave Hill Billy says, I've seen the videos of the ghostly quiet hospitals too. For the record, supposedly 533 confirmed cases, 22 deaths in Northern Ireland. I know a girl who works in the Mater Hospital in Belfast, which is coronavirus headquarters. She says there were 15 admissions altogether yesterday, Sunday. Thank you, Cave Hillbilly. Hi to Fabrizio Novicelli. How you doing, Fabrizio? Thank you very much for your tweet. And I will read that a bit later on, my friend. Hi to Laurie Hatfield. How you doing, Laurie? Thanks for your tweet. Hi to Ian Robert Horton. How you doing, Ian? And there was a tweet there I wanted to read out, but I bloody well lost it. It happens all the time. Charity Girl tweets, Richie, I've not been out today, but definitely have been researching. She says, there's definitely something not right, and lots are waking up to it, she says. I've been looking at hospital footage inside. I work in a hospital, she says, and I have in ITU. Nothing abnormal in any footage, but to the untrained eye, it could look very dramatic, says Charlie. That's a very interesting perspective, Charlie. An untrained person like me might look at a video of a hospital doing its thing, a hospital in order, in operation, and I might think it all looks a bit chaotic, but it might just be normal. Thank you so much for that. Lots of tweets coming in. I am going to read them. Hi to John Larson. How you doing, John? One or two of you have had problems, by the way, getting the radio show today. I think it's because I've been away for a few weeks. You seem to be online with me now. That's good. Hi to Jason J. Gage. How you doing, Jason? Nice to have you back, says Jason. My better half, Angeline, is listening to you live for the very first time. Angeline, welcome to the show. How you doing, kid? Hope you're well. Hope you're not getting too bogged down by what's been going on. And John Stott tweets to me, I did enjoy seeing a guy in a face mask coming out of a bargain booze with two bags full of alcohol. Avoid the virus, says John, but obliterate the liver instead. Rock and roll. Yes. Hi to Chris Morell too. How you doing, Chris? A G20 happened by video a few days ago, apparently. That's the G20, of course. The world's economic superpowers. Met by video. Putin asked for lifting sanctions on Iran. Right? And the Putin puppet said no, of course. Doesn't make too much sense that, Chris. You might want to retweet that to me. The sensible actors on the world scene are shown to be Russia and China as usual. Putin wanted sanctions lifted on Iran. And other leaders, of course, didn't go along with that. Thanks for that, Chris. I really appreciate that. Let me scroll on down. Hi to Liz Jones again. Again, Liz, thanks for the guest recommendation. I will look into that. Hi to Phil Traharn. Thanks for the link, Phil, to Lord Sumption on Radio 4. I will get a listen to that later on. Hi to Johnny Dillon. How you doing, Johnny? And hi to Paul Curtis, who's a tour operator and a long-time listener to The Richie Allen Show. Paul alleges they, he says, are trying to turn Birmingham Airport into a 1,500-person morgue. Why do they need a 1,500-person morgue, says Paul of Paul Curtis Tours. That's a very good question, if indeed it is true, Paul. And I am not saying you are telling fibs, my friend. 29 minutes, 28 and a half minutes it is, to the top of the air. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show. John Rappaport from NoMoreFakeNews.com will join me very, very soon. And I'm looking forward to hearing from him. So I am. There you are. Stay at home. Stay at home. So that's what they're saying. Stay at home. The hospitals are filling up. We need temporary ones. Yet we are seeing these videos, many of them amateur videos online, as I mentioned earlier on, alleging that exaggeration is the order of the day. These videos showing the quiet hospitals, they are saying that our legs are being pulled. What do you think? Tweet the program. If you disagree, don't be frightened to tweet your dissent. We don't want yes men and yes women here on the Richie Allen Radio Show. If you think I'm talking through my arse, and I do quite a bit, do tweet it to me. If you've got a different point of view, tweet it and I will read it out. Remember, right soon, this week we're going to have a phone in. And I do hope you'll phone in and chat to me about your feelings about this whole lockdown, wherever you happen to be in the world. Your Richie Allen Radio Show. Lovely to be back with you this Monday.
Renowned healer Mark Byerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Byerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbyerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
And Mark Byerski was absolutely wonderful to me when I was very ill, hugely helpful and supportive. As you know, I mentioned this on the live streams on YouTube last week. Absolutely wonderful guy. Check him out, markbyerski.com. Now, another tune, and then we'll hear from Brendan O'Neill, the editor of Spiked Online. I wasn't kind to Brendan on a live stream last week, but hey ho, pass the butter, right? Called him a gatekeeper, and I gave a pretty rational explanation for calling him that, whether consciously or unconsciously or subconsciously. But he does say some interesting things. We'll hear from him. We'll hear from the Met Police Commissioner, Cressida Dick. How are the police approaching the policing of the government's lockdown requirements? Well, we'll hear that in a minute. But before that, let's have some Paolo Nutini. Paolo Nutini. Paolo Nutini. Paolo Nutini. Is it Nutini, Nutini, Nutini? It's Paolo Nutini. Pencil full of lead on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Monday's programme, March 30th to 30th of March. It's brilliant to be back with you. Loving being back with you. John Rappaport joins me. The trigger warning, lads, the impresarios, the broadcasting guys in Manchester, in North Manchester, in South Manchester, Graham Booth and Hayden Hewitt are broadcasting daily, nightly on triggerwarning.tv, the Trigger Warning channel on YouTube. Check it out if you haven't done before. One or two of you are tweeting me saying you can't get the show. Now, I can't help you. It is streaming loud and proud on richieallen.co.uk. I know this because I am monitoring it. I'm a multitasker. It's also on the TuneIn Radio app, and it's fine. So I don't know what to tell you. I'd love to have the answer, but it's for you to sort out. Maybe it's your browser. I don't know. Now, Charlotte Binns is in Burnley. Long-time listener. Sent me a Facebook, a snapshot of a Facebook page. A woman called Natasha Harris is a staff nurse working in the NHS. And she posted this to her Facebook page the other day. She's a staff nurse, allegedly. I haven't verified this myself now, right? But seemingly she's a staff nurse at the NHS. And she posted on her Facebook page, "Someone please explain how relatives are being told do not attempt resuscitation. is being placed on suspected or confirmed COVID-19 patients. Now we know why these people are dying, because they are doing nothing to save their lives, writes this Natasha Harris, this alleged staff nurse. And nothing to save their lives is in block capital letters. She says, I don't care if the trust suspends me for putting this out there. The nation must know the truth. I've retweeted that, but I'm telling you, I haven't verified it. Charlotte came across this on Facebook, and Charlotte is clever enough as well not to take things at face value. So Charlotte asked her own friend, who is a nurse, and her friend said that yes, what Natasha Harris said is in fact technically true. That's pretty sinister, if it is the case, right? 20 minutes to the top of the hour. It's the BBG, not the BBC. So what about policing this then, this lockdown? This gulag type existence they want us to live. Well, I know. You'll exaggerate. You'll say you're exaggerating, Richie. Okay. I mentioned Brendan O'Neill, the editor of Spiked Online. I wasn't kind to Brendan. Not that he gives a shit, I wouldn't imagine, whether I was kind to him or not. I called him a gatekeeper, and he is, consciously or not. These guys are gatekeepers. They masquerade as the alternative and are promoted by the system as the alternative on the alt-right. And the reason they are promoted as the alternative, in my opinion, is to hide the genuine alternative. Anyway, doesn't mean that Brendan O'Neill won't write or say something that's worth even repeating. He was on with his friend Julia Hartley Brewer on Talk Radio today. And Brendan is worried about the snitching. And by snitching, he's worried about people ratting out their neighbours, like phoning up the police or going online to report that their neighbour has maybe gone out maybe one too many times today. My neighbour went to the shop and then he came back and then he went to the shop again. And then he went for a walk. This kind of thing, it is going on. Here is the editor of Spiked Online, Brendan O'Neill.
You know, the thing that's really disturbing me about this lockdown, I'm handling it pretty well, and I'm sure most people are as well for the time being. But what's really disturbing me is the snitching. You know, if we become a nation of snitches through this process, that will be a complete disaster. And the fact that some police forces said they've had dozens and dozens of calls from people about their neighbour going out for a second jog or someone walking their dog more than they're allowed to, that's really worrying. You know, there was a comedy club in Liverpool streamed an old gig that it held in its comedy club a few months ago, streamed it online. Lots of people thought it was a live gig and they phoned the police, and the police went down to the comedy club. Loads and loads of police officers, complete waste of time. So, you know, all these grasses and squealers and snitches, that's a really depressing aspect of this.
I think we
need more trust. And if we come out of this process in a Stasi-like country where we're all spying on each other, then it really will have been a bad process to have gone through.
A bad process to have gone through if we come out in a kind of a Stasi-like country. But that's the point. That's what's meant to happen. None of this is coincidental. And this is why sometimes I get very annoyed. And if you've been with me a long time, as many of the listeners to the programme have been, they've been with me a long time, you'll know that I get really peeved off with people that I call gatekeepers who always go down the route that this is bad policy, you know? This is a bad policy. This is an unfortunate reaction. This is a mistake. It isn't bad policy. It isn't a feckin' mistake. It's what was meant to happen all along. These are the same people who will tell you that, yes, when we went into Iraq in 2003, you know, and we dismantled the political apparatus of the country, what we know now as de-bathification, that was a bad mistake. It wasn't a fucking bad mistake, you dickhead! They did it deliberately to destroy the country. When will you learn? Stop writing things off to, this is a mistake. It's not a mistake. This is what they want. They want people to be snitching on one another. They want people to beg for their DNA profiles to be taken and to be stored by the government. They want people to beg for more and more draconian measures to deal with this virus. They want people to turn on one another. And people are obliging them. Hey, listen. On the whole streaming thing, hi to Rebecca Nicol. How you doing, Rebecca? Nice to hear from you. Richie, I couldn't get the program on Google Chrome. I switched to Microsoft Edge and it's fine. I always have problems with radio live streams on Chrome, says Rebecca. Thanks for that, Rebecca. I'm pretty useless myself when it comes to giving advice like that. I defer to, well, multitasking geniuses like Hayden Hewitt of LiveLeak.com, of course, and TriggerWarning.tv. I wouldn't have a Scooby-Doo now. All I do know is that the program is streaming on richieallen.co.uk without incident and the other places. But thank you, Rebecca. That might make a lot of sense, actually. There you go. All right. 15 minutes to the top of the air. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show. And as we say in... No, we won't. We'll do that later on. I was going to segue into something. We'll do it later on. We'll do it later on. Right, let's move on then. Where was I? Yes, Cressida Dick. Cressida Dick is the police commissioner. She's the Metropolitan Police Commissioner. She's got the top job. She spoke to LBC Radio's Nick Ferrari this morning. She regularly drops in to Nick Ferrari's programme. And today Ferrari asked her how she thought the police were approaching the matter of those who don't stay indoors, because stories are emerging of very heavy-handed tactics by the police here in the country. So Nick Ferrari says to Cressida Dick, how do you think you as a police force are handling this whole thing? Here's what she said to him.
Well, we're all getting used to the new restrictions, aren't we? And I've been very clear that in the first instance, I want my officers to be engaging with people, talking with people, encouraging them to comply, explaining, of course, if they don't understand. And I think already, you know, we have had examples of people who simply hadn't quite heard all the messages. And only as a very last resort with the current restrictions, using, you know, firm direction or even enforcement. And I'm very proud of the way they've been going about that. We've been very high profile in lots and lots of places, talking to people where there have been gatherings, just, you know, gently clearing those gatherings. And of course, if the restrictions change in the future, then we will play our part. But, you know, we're not doing what you might call roadblocks or anything like that. Yes, we stop motorists sometimes. We have a conversation with them. You know, they might have a light out. We'll talk to them. We might ask them, you know, about their journey. But it, our approach is one of entirely trying to help educate and encourage people.
Where do you stand on other forces, such as Derbyshire, taking pictures of motorists who park their cars in park land to go for a walk and highlighting that on social media, or South Wales Police questioning whether Stephen Kinnock should have gone to see his father, Lord Kinnock?
As I've said, I think we're all trying to get used to this. My approach in my service is one entirely of trying to encourage people, to engage with people, to have conversations with people. And I think actually all
citizens... Would your force put pictures of people up if they were parking near Greenwich Park or Richmond Park? You wouldn't do something like that in the Met, would they?
I don't think we have done that. I don't think we have done that. And I certainly haven't asked people to do that.
Do you see a value in it,
Commissioner?
We are
adopting a very collaborative with the public approach, but I would also ask all citizens to, where they feel safe to do so and where it's appropriate, to be encouraging members of their family and people they know to learn about the restrictions and to comply with them.
Lastly, one newspaper today, The Times, says police will cut services, drop investigations and scale back their response to crime as forces hit different tipping points in the crisis. There will be a graduated withdrawal of service plan, as it's called. Commissioner.
So I've already said that at the moment we are extremely resilient and we're providing, I think, an excellent service. And I'm determined that we continue to do that as far as we reasonably can.
There you go. Cressida Dick there. Nothing to see here. Please disperse, says Cressida Dick. But stories are emerging all around the country of police acting in a very heavy-handed way with people, breaking up karaoke's in people's houses. There's something very wrong with that, isn't there? You're a private citizen. If a couple of your mates come around to have a karaoke with you and a few drinks, you're not living in a free country if the old Bill can bang down the door and tell your mates they have to leave and threaten you that you'll be fined or arrested if there are any further breaches of these new government guidelines. Anyway, 10 minutes it is to the top of the hour. Have you planned a holiday for the summer? Are you biting your nails, are you? Down to the quick? Are you biting them down to the quick? Are you biting them? Are you worried that you won't be going to Benidorm or Santa Ponza? Well, you won't be, apparently. You won't be going anywhere, apparently. Says who? Well, Sky News had the Daily Telegraph's travel guy, the journalist Nick Trend. Nick was on Sky today. And he was asked, will we have to say adios to a siesta in Spain this summer? See what I did there? See what I did? Here's Nick Trend from The Telegraph.
I think it's almost certain, isn't it? I've got a holiday booked for May the 28th.
Fuck you, Nick. All this me shit. What about other people who've booked their holidays?
To Greece, and I've had a message from British Airways asking if I want to shift the flights forward, further back, and I'm going to try and arrange it for 2021 now. I think that September's looking questionable, and we're really looking, I think, at possibly a lost summer for European holidays this year. So if you can rearrange your holidays, cancel them, postpone them to next year, I think at least on into July, if anything arranged up that far, then I would certainly do so.
And Dr. Simon Clark, just finally, I mean, obviously we don't know, but what would be your best guess as to the period which this effective lockdown is likely to last?
I would think well into May, possibly early June. It needs to be remembered that we'll reach a peak probably, probably in about 2 to 3 weeks, maybe a little less, and then the peak will level out. It won't come down immediately, and we need to keep the control mechanisms in place. Otherwise, the infection rate will just go up again.
So basically, forget any plans before June.
I'm not making any, no.
The first voice you heard there was Nick Trend from The Telegraph saying cancel your holiday. And the last voice was Simon Clark, who's a microbiologist in Reading. He said into June for the lockdown. But the government is saying, and has been saying on UK media today, that the lockdown might conceivably go on for about 6 months. Wow. And I did come across a story on RT, so I did. And that story was about... That story alleged that the so-called authorities in Italy were concerned that the draconian nature of the measures might lead to civil unrest. And I've been speaking to one or two friends of mine privately about this. What is the possibility? What are the probabilities? Is there a possibility that people will get so fecked off in the UK and in Ireland with these measures that eventually there will be mass breaches of the stay-at-home orders to the point where there might be violence? I don't know. I get asked these questions all the time as if I am a soothsayer. No soothsayer am I have no idea. But maybe 7.5 minutes to the top of the hour. This is a drive time radio programme, but nobody's driving. Nobody's at work today. I'm pretty sure, even though this is the first radio show proper for a while because I was ill, and you would expect there to be a surge in the numbers of listeners, which there has been, but I'm guessing there's been a further surge of live listeners today because people are not at work. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So don't think about any holidays. Bizarre moment on NBC News this morning. You may have heard the name Deborah Birx doing the rounds of social media. Dr. Debbie Birx. That's B-I-R-X. She stunned the presenter on NBC News, the lovely Savannah, by telling Savannah, even if we do everything right here in the United States, even if we are perfect in our response to the coronavirus, 100,000 to 200,000 will still die, even if we do it properly. Here's Dr. Debbie.
So in the flu models, the worst case scenario is between 1.6 million and 2.2 million deaths. That's the projection if you do nothing. So we've never really done all of these things that we're doing. We've put them into a model. We've looked at the Italy data with their self-isolation. And that's where we come up with, if we do things together well, almost perfectly, we could get in the range of 100,000 to 200,000 fatalities. We don't even want to see
that. I know, but you know, you kind of take my breath away with that, because what I hear you saying is that's sort of the best case scenario. If everything works and people do the things you're asking them to do, maybe you can hold the deaths to 1 to 200,000 in this country.
I know, right? That's exactly what she said. Even if we do it properly, a couple of 100,000 might still die. I smell something here.
Well, the best case scenario would be 100% of Americans doing precisely what is required. But we're not sure, based on the data that you're sharing from around the world and seeing these pictures, that all of America is responding in a uniform way to protect one another. So we also have to factor that in. Cities that don't social distances, that don't stay at home, that believe you can have social interactions, that believe you can have gatherings of homes of 20 and 10 people even, that is going to spread the virus even if everyone looks well.
Mm-hmm. Bit fishy, isn't it? Even if you do everything properly, 200,000 might die. The left hand of God is tweeting, who would have believed that the British plebs would simply roll over whilst at the same time grassing up anyone with a modicum of rebelliousness on the way? There will be no rebellion, no saviour, tweets the left hand of God. We are fecked. And Chris came back to tweet that he is still at work and driving as a home care worker. Thanks, Chris. Yeah, of course, not everybody is at home, but there are far, far more people now not working. And I've not even gotten into that today because I don't want to bore you. You know, the implications for this financially in the very near future. We might just do a little bit in a second. Before that, though, David, who tweets as La Antenna. How are you, David? Richie, back when COVID-19 was still only an and in China story, thousands of hitherto unarmed UK police were issued with tasers. Was this the priority early government planning ahead of PPE? Is that right, David? That's very interesting. See, I've been quite ill myself. So if, while the coronavirus was a story about China back in the day, back in January, back in February, if they were giving thousands of police officers in the UK tasers, I do find that very interesting indeed. Lance tweets, lockdown mechanisms, how very deliberately Orwellian. And Michael Gove, Cabinet Secretary, the Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster, speaking to Andrew Marr on the BBC yesterday morning, did say that there would be lots of borrowing in order to navigate these stormy coronavirus waters, but that saving lives is more important than worrying about the borrowing. But yes, the borrowing will have to be paid back. This is Michael Gove yesterday. This is very important.
The most important thing at the moment is to save lives. We've got to put the lives of the vulnerable ahead of everything else. Now, the Chancellor's outlined a package which is amongst the most generous in the world. We're putting our arms around everyone in order to ensure that people do not need to be laid off, and that the self-employed can be supported. That will increase the amount that we borrow. But the Chancellor and the economic team at the Treasury are confident that we can pay that off in due course. But ultimately, How do you put a price on life? It is vitally important that everything that we do now is focused on making sure that we save the maximum.
Yes, it'll be paid back in due course, said Michael Gove. I won't labour the point, because I've talked quite a bit about it on Sunday's programme, yesterday's programme, and on the live streams. One of the big payoffs for the elite is the destruction of the economy, plunging hundreds and hundreds of millions of people into poverty, and the real wealth grab that follows. No radio or television presenter in the UK has the balls, has the courage, has the gumption to ask one of these government ministers, why are the banks profiting from this dreadful scenario? Why should they be loaning hundreds of millions, nay billions, to the government at interest? Why should the banks make anything out of it? No, there isn't a presenter or a reporter in this country with a single bollock. Not one. Because they know it's game over. It's P45 time, if you ever dare to put forth a question like that. Music from George Ezra. John Rappaport joins the Richie Allen Radio Show in a few minutes' time. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show, 3.5 minutes past six. It is Monday, the 30th of March, 2020. George Ezra, Paradise There. I'm delighted to welcome to this programme, always a brilliant, a gifted writer and broadcaster. You know him from his website, No More Fake News. He's been writing and he's been doing real journalism for 30 years, longer even. I was glad to hear from him the other day, and when I was coming back after being pretty ill myself. He's been following this coronavirus COVID-19 story since the outset, and is writing about it extensively on his website, asking questions that shamefully, and pointing out discrepancies in the official story that shamefully are not being pointed out by our mainstream media. NoMoreFakeNews.com is the website. Delighted as always to welcome back to the programme our friend John Rappaport. And thanks for giving us your time today, John. Welcome back.
Welcome, Richie. It's great to be here. Glad you're feeling better. And glad you're there. That's all I can say.
Well, thanks so much for that. And before we talk about your article today, which is mind-boggling, about the diagnostic testing and how the testing itself is creating this illusion that there is a pandemic. This is really important work. We'll talk about that and more. I just want to ask you, just briefly, the response of people to this. Maybe I'm a bit naive, maybe. I'm not a young man, but I've not been doing this sort of radio maybe for as long as you have. And I naively thought that people would be a bit more wise to this. I never thought that people would capitulate in the way they have to the demands to stay indoors and the drones flying around screaming at them to get indoors. And how have you reacted to that, John? What are your thoughts looking at the public acquiescence to the demands being placed upon them?
It is astonishing, Richie, to me. No question about it. I think, and we've talked in the past about other phony epidemics, that part of the reason that people are so acquiescent here is because they've been tuned up and conditioned by West Nile, SARS, swine flu, Zika, you name it. So in these sort of test runs, they've come to believe in the World Health Organization and the Centers for Disease Control and their own governments to a sufficient degree that they are willing to accept the basic religious dogma about this pandemic. But I also have to point out, and I've mentioned this several times in my articles, that the key moment in all of this was the Chinese regime suddenly overnight locking down 50 million of its own citizens in three cities, which it then, of course, expanded to 100 million. So this sent a signal around the world to these public health authorities and governments that China had broken the ice, so to speak, and that this was now possible to do. And it could work, which is like the wet dream of the World Health Organization and the CDC and the United Nations. And so they looked at this, what the Chinese had done, and they said, wow, okay, if we ever needed a sign and a signal that we could move forward with this now in a much bigger way than we've ever done before, you know, this is it. This is our moment. We think from our studies of past fake epidemics that people are ready for this now, the lockdowns. Let's try it out and see. And so the first victim was Italy, bringing it to the West. Now, of course, Italy has a huge population of elderly that are sick and dying of the flu-like diseases every year. I've quoted those figures in past articles. They dwarf what's happening now with the so-called COVID in Italy. They have horrendously polluted air over major cities that give rise to ordinary lung infections that can be diagnosed as COVID. And they have a very strong relationship with the Chinese regime. The Italian government is floating on Chinese money in the One Belt, One Road economic project through which China is apparently refurbishing a couple of major seaports in Italy. And it's interesting to note that Italy would be the first Western nation to do the lockdowns. On top of that, we had the head of the World Health Organization very early on praising China to the skies for their handling of the epidemic, meaning their lockdowns. So this is some of the material that people have to be aware of and how the stage was set for all of this. And yet, even so, I agree with you, it's astonishing the degree of capitulation of the population, but they have been tuned up, and with all these other factors, they have folded up.
I was thinking this morning about stories that emerged locally here in Manchester over the weekend. The supermarkets here, I'm guessing in the US it's happening too, they've marked the pavements outside the supermarkets with lines to encourage people to distance by 6 feet or 2 meters. And I was astonished to learn that in two local supermarkets to me, obviously Saturday, John, is a crazy day because everybody wants to shop on Saturday, but also to do their weekly large shopping thing on Saturday. But obviously because of what's been happening, it's getting more difficult to shop. So wrapped up in this are people that yesterday it emerged that in a couple of local supermarkets, fights broke out amongst people whom were getting agitated that the person behind them or in front of them wasn't observing the 2 meter isolation zone. And then I heard that fights broke out inside supermarkets because they've changed the flooring inside supermarkets as well to make sure that there are little zones. You can't have more than two people in a zone at any one time. And people feeling threatened by another person's presence, feeling that they might be in danger of coming into contact with the virus, are fighting. It's to me, I don't know what to do with that. It's, are you hearing stories like that back home?
I haven't heard about the fighting, but I understand exactly what you're saying.
The fear.
There was an incident. A friend told me she was walking in a park, and you know, this is a park around a lake. And people and their families go down there. and they walk around and so on. So she was down there, and I'm sure there were not very many people there. And a car drove by, and somebody in the car shouted, "Get out of the park, coronavirus."
Right.
You know, this kind of behavior of, it's fascism, it's fascistic insanity. It's like people moving over into the psychology of, we are on the side of the government enforcing the regulations that are designed to protect us. Now, of course, they're brainwashed into believing in the virus and the contagion factor and all of this. So that's heavy, heavy programming. I mean, that's been going on for more than 100 years. So it's a specialized situation. But nevertheless, that's what we're seeing. People move into the mindset of, whereas they might ordinarily be, let's say, rebels in some way or another, but now suddenly they're on the side of the government. They're the enforcers. They want to feel the energy of forcing something. And since they're afraid to rebel, they turn into agents of the government. We saw something like this. I had no idea, Richie, we were going to get into this, but it's very important. During the Vietnam War, the most famous of the American motorcycle gangs, Hell's Angels, at one point petitioned, I'm sure the president at the time was Lyndon Johnson, petitioned to form a special unit to go to Vietnam to fight the communists over there. Okay, these are men and women who ordinarily would be complete outliers and rebels against, quote, the system.
Yeah.
Right? But now suddenly they're patriots and they want guns and they want to kill people. And they don't care about the niceties of figuring out whether the war was justified or not. All they know suddenly is, we're on the side of America and we want to kill people that are our enemies. This is a very troubling phenomenon, because we've seen this, really, when I say we, I'm talking more about Europe. We've seen this in Italy, we've seen this in Germany in World War II, where the citizenry not only knuckles under, but they join up. They become the rigid enforcers, because there's something in their psychology that they can tap into. The alternative in their mind would be, I don't have enough energy to live.
Yeah.
I don't have enough energy to survive. So I'm going to have to go over to the side of being a fascist with the government, because then at least I'll have the energy and the force to survive. Even if it involves persecuting and killing people, it doesn't matter. It's madness.
It is madness. And I'd like you to talk about your article, which I don't need to retweet you. You've got tens of thousands of readers here in the UK alone. I know that millions of people get your articles through nomorefakenews.com around the world. But I'd like you to talk about it in a second. But before you do, it would be remiss of me not to mention our listeners, because they're tweeting in massive numbers this afternoon. And they're asking me to put some very good questions to you. And you can answer them as briefly as you want, John. One of them is about the desire on behalf of the governments to get everybody tested. Tony Blair, insert expletive here, I suppose. Tony Blair, one of the greatest lawyers and mass murderers the world has ever known, was on Sky Television News yesterday saying that it's vital that the entire country is given the culture test, where they stick the Q-tip up your nose and on the back of your throat. So my listeners are asking you, do you believe that rather than try to find out who has the virus and who doesn't, that the real agenda here is to get everybody's DNA profile locked down. What do you think?
Well, certainly that would be one of the items on the agenda. There are several. Yes, the answer, because bureaucracies always want more information on people. And this is pretty good information, right? So they would certainly want that, and they would want to store it, save it, keep it, investigate it, profile it, collate it into categories of their own making, and all of the above. You bet. No question about it.
No doubt about it.
But also what they want to do, as David Icke explained, and as I've been writing about for the past, I guess, since all of this started at the beginning, the test itself generates inherently positive results, meaning by positive, I mean the person is now said to have the COVID virus. The test is designed to do that. And therefore, the numbers of cases that will be reported by the government and by the press will expand dramatically. And the press will flash that back to the population saying, last month or last week, we saw a sudden rise in the number of COVID cases. It jumped by 17,000. And suddenly people will be even more afraid than ever, which is the whole point, right? So that's a main item in the agenda, to do that. But of course, that creates a problem for them. And the problem is, when you do that, the so-called case fatality rate, which is the percentage of, quote, infected people who then go on to die, will precipitously drop. Because by and large, the overwhelming number of people who are tested are healthy and are going to remain healthy. So the government is going to have to fiddle with that fatality statistic or hide it in some way, because if they don't, people are going to become aware that this whole thing is relatively harmless because the percentage of people dying is so small. So they're going to have to conceal that. But they figure it's worth it because they can broadcast all of these horrifying case numbers, which are another part of the illusion.
Well, we're going to talk about that now. John Rappaport is our guest. Thanks for the tweets. They are very interesting. I'll put one or two more of them to John before we finish up today. John's not going anywhere for a while. NoMoreFakeNews.com. Brilliant article. And fairly scary, to be honest, reading it today. At the mendacity and the gullibility of people. Because, again, it's not easy for people to understand this. You do a brilliant job of making it easy to understand in your writing. John has written today about how the public is convinced that a pandemic is happening through the testing that is done at governmental level, at health service level, the diagnostic tests, but why those diagnostic tests are fairly worthless. John, I don't do it justice. Explain how they create the illusion of a pandemic, which is a global, I suppose, storm of a virus that's potentially deadly for all of us, through these tests. But in fact, the tests, when you look, as you've done brilliantly in the piece, when you look really closely at it, the testing actually reveals the opposite.
Yes. Okay, so in the article, what I basically did was I used the official information on the test against the official people, because I discovered in their own literature that they admit that the test has grave flaws in it. It can register positive, which again supposedly means the person is infected by the virus, because of a number of other germs that are completely irrelevant and make the test register positive in a false way. That's called a false positive. So if your body happens to contain this germ or that germ or this germ or that germ, on and on and on, all of which are irrelevant and harmless, nevertheless, the test could say you are positive for the coronavirus. They admit this in their own literature.
Yeah.
I'm quoting the World Health Organization, the FDA in America, which is the certifying agency for all medical drugs and tests and devices. I'm quoting a significant corporation that manufactures the test kits. The test, by the way, is called the PCR. And in their own literature, they also say, and I've highlighted these quotes in the article, the test may not describe or pinpoint the definite cause of disease. What this is basically saying is, even if the test is revealing the presence of the coronavirus, even if we assume that's true, the virus may not be the definite cause of disease. So that would be, for example, a person who's sick with some lung flu-like symptoms, and the doctor says, you test positive for the coronavirus. Well, their own official literature is saying, hey, wait a minute, that may not be true at all. You could be suffering from just plain old influenza or plain old pneumonia from reasons that have nothing to do with the coronavirus. They admit this in their own literature. So I pointed out several of these mind-boggling confessions, you might say, in their own literature, which completely destroy the value of the test, while at the same time revealing that the test can be used to inflate the number of actual cases. Inflate them beyond count if you want to use it on enough people, the test. Another factor, and this is a little more subtle, but it's vitally important. One of the companies that manufactures the test says on its website, the use of the test is qualitative. Now, what that means is that's a confession that even if the test is done correctly, and even if it does, we assume for the moment, indicate the presence of the coronavirus, it does not say how much virus is actively replicating in the body of a person in the real world. And why would that be important? Because, as every medical professional ought to know, in order to say a person is sick or is going to get sick, you have to show that millions upon millions upon millions of a particular virus are, in fact, actively replicating in his body. And the test is not designed to be able to detect that one way or another. Therefore, it is completely useless. The test itself has never been vetted to prove that it is worth its salt, that it can do what it says it can do. And I have proposed a vetting process, which should have been done decades ago when the test was first introduced, that would prove or disprove in the real world that the test can work. It's very simple. You line up, let's say, 500 people, and you have a group of technicians take these swabs of test samples, as you mentioned earlier, and then they transport these test samples to the actual testers in the lab, who will never meet these 500 people or know who they are or whether they're healthy or sick. And the testers will be told, okay, test each sample from these 500 people. Tell us what virus you found in each case and how much you found in each case, because you claim you can do that. And then they do. And then they say, okay, in patient number 2, 16, 34, 48, 152, and so on and so forth, we found a great deal of virus. And you say, okay, well, those particular patients should be sick, really sick. I mean, not in the lab, in the real world, because you claim you found so much virus in these people. So let's unblind them now and introduce them and see whether the patients you just named are actually sick or are they running marathons.
Yeah.
Let's find out. Now, that would have been the study that should have been done before the test was ever certified for public use. It was never done. Therefore, the test was never vetted to see whether it really works. And so it's a phony baloney from the beginning, and it tends to multiply, as I've said, the number of cases. In fact, it can register positive because of at least one other coronavirus, which has nothing to do with this one, and possibly more harmless coronaviruses, which do nothing but cause common colds. So there you have the mess of a test, which can nevertheless be used to expand the number of cases, at which point governments say, well, you see, people, how dangerous this is, this virus. So there's no choice. What do we have to do? We have to lock down populations, causing tremendous economic devastation, throwing people out of work, no paychecks, no jobs. Small businesses go bankrupt and shut down. People go crazy. They have to isolate at home. They can't go out. We have the population under control, which is what we wanted to do, all because we've rigged the game to produce this effect.
It was staggering to read that today and to cross-reference the notes. Because just to remind our listeners, what John has done there is he's taken their own literature. This is official stuff. This is proper old school journalism. And he's found that they acknowledge themselves that the test is fairly worthless in terms of discovering how many people have got COVID-19, which is supposed to be very virulent and very sinister. And John has shown, as he said there, I don't have to sum up John Rappaport, he's explained it himself, but this is staggering stuff, that the tests give up, they elicit maybe thousands, maybe millions of false positives, because it's designed in a way that it will register positive for types of coronavirus that, as John says, have nothing to do with COVID-19. Other coronaviruses, we know there are many, which give you nothing more than a cold, maybe a bit of a chill, maybe a bit of a head cold, or whatever. So the $64 million question is then, and we've got listeners here listening through commercial radio stations like Fab Radio. They don't often read davidicke.com. There are people listening to this for the first time. As experienced and as well known as you are, John, some people are hearing you for the first time. They're going to say, ask him then, Richie, why? Is it a mistake? Is it bad practice that they've designed a test with so many bloody holes in it? Or is there something else going on?
Well, people can make up their own minds about that themselves, but because I've been quoting official sources here as to how bad the test is. First of all, you have to understand that the public health officials and even many doctors understand this already. They know this, whether they would admit it or not. They understand all that I've been saying about the test. It's not a secret from them. So if people know this, the professionals, and yet they go along with the show, what are we to say about them at the very least? That they too are sheep being herded at the very least. Now, of course, my contention, as I've been talking about and writing about since 1987, is that these are intentional operations, covert operations, designed to do exactly to reach the point that we are at now. West Nile, swine flu, Zika, on and on and on and on. Test runs to bring the population to the point where they will accept the kind of control over them that is being exerted now. And even in some cases will join the government, so to speak, in trying to enforce all of the lockdowns. Because there are forces in the world, whether we like to admit it or not, and these are elite forces, that want a controlled world, a controlled planet. That is their goal. That is their aim. Bigger and bigger government wants more and more control. They want to be able to say, we are your friend, we will help you. You can't do it on your own. We understand that. Everyone is a victim. We're all in this together. We're your friend. We will help you, help you, help you. But you must obey our rules. That is generally, in many countries, the tactic that is used. Now, in China, they don't bother with that. I mean, they will use that propaganda, but they will also arrest people in great numbers and simply disappear them. So it varies from country to country on the brutality of it. But there is no doubt in my mind that these operations are intentional.
What are the implications for somebody like you, John? It's interesting, we talk about the public begging for the controls. Just briefly, before I ask you my next question, here in the UK, people are being urged to contact the police if they feel their neighbours are breaching the government demands or the government guidelines. I never thought I'd see the day, but people are doing it. In fact, a senior police officer addressing the UK media today said they're being overwhelmed by calls from the public snitching on their neighbours. This is absolutely incredible. It's mad. What are the implications for somebody like you? I learned through the brilliant writing of Peter Hitchens in the Mail on Sunday that one of the provisions from an old act, ironically passed in 1984, would you believe, in this country, ironically, does give powers to the government to take on the print media and the broadcast media if the government feels that they've become a danger to the public because they've been passing fake information. Now, I read your article today. There isn't anything like it in the independent media. I'm not kissing your arse, John, you know that. Nobody's doing anything like that. That level of detail, that research, you know, listing your sources, creating a trail for people to follow. It's outstanding stuff. It's inevitable that very soon they're going to start shutting down people like you, or attempting to anyway, saying, I'm sorry, Mr. Rappaport, but what you're writing is simply untrue. And that could cause somebody some harm. Somebody might get sick because of somebody like you. Therefore, nomorefakenews.com is going to have to be put on hiatus. What do you think of that?
Well, I've known that it's possible for a long time. And I've seen censorship worked on other individuals, especially online censorship. So, yes, I mean, what am I going to say? Yeah. Sure, it's possible. But I want to comment on something else that you talked about, which is the snitch culture.
Yeah, the snitching, yeah.
Because it's divide and conquer, you see. I mean, that's the plan. Because what is really all this social distancing and self-isolation all about? It's about increasing not just the physical, but the psychological and, dare I say, the spiritual distance between people. That is a vital part of this covert operation. So that people, by snitching on each other, now you have a society that increasingly becomes like the old USSR or Nazi Germany, where people, they have nothing better to do let's say that they have an innate tendency to meddle and gossip, okay, which accounts for a huge proportion of the population, all right? Now, normally they have very little power to meddle in anybody else's affairs. They can gossip all they want, but meddling is something else. But now they are accorded this new power. The police are interested. Oh, really? You saw somebody greet 9 people that came into their apartment that weren't their family? Okay, so what's the address? What's the apartment number? I have an article from, I think this was Palm Springs area in California, Southern California, and this was about 2 to 3 weeks ago, where the police said that they were starting to get calls from people who said that their neighbors, meaning, I guess, in apartments, were coughing, if you can believe that.
Wow.
Coughing. And it was unclear as to how often the police responded, but at least in a few cases, medical teams were actually sent out to these neighbors. And they were taken, I don't know how many, to hospitals. Well, how's that? You're sitting in your apartment. You just ate something and it went down the wrong part of your, and you start coughing. And somebody next door hears this, and they're a meddler and a gossip with a kind of little vicious streak in them. And they call up 911, which in the United States means the cops or emergency, whatever. So it's divide and conquer. Divide people from each other. Set them against each other so that they don't get together and start talking and say, you know, this whole thing is insane. I'm not afraid of getting sick. I don't mind walking out on the street.
Yeah.
In fact, that's what I want to do. What do you think, Bob?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, well, now that you brought it up, I mean, it is crazy what's going on. You know, okay, well, they don't want that to spread. So instead, it's much better if Bob turns out to be a snitch and he calls up the cops because his neighbor is coughing or his neighbor has 9 people in his apartment or whatever. This is part of the operation.
Here's a question for you. Folks, you're listening to John Rappaport, nomorefakenews.com, nomorefakenews.com. Check him out. Here's the question. When they tell us real soon, I don't know, in a month or 2 months or 3 months, that they have a vaccine for COVID-19, do you imagine that this might become the first globally mandated vaccine? Basically, they might say to people, if you're a working man or a working woman, you can't return to your place of work unless you get vaccinated against COVID-19. What do you think?
It's possible. I'll give you a little background on this. There is now a development of some kind of tattoo that indicates a person's compliance with vaccine schedule. Bill Gates had something to do with this. In the United States, the Department of Health and Human Services, which is a gigantic federal operation, has issued a regulation which takes the power of law. I'm sure the same thing is true in UK. These agencies can form regulations based on laws that have been passed, they say. And even though these agencies don't have the power of passing legislation, their regulations become laws de facto. So this law now establishes complete liability from lawsuits for any person involved in taking a countermeasure against COVID-19 through medical drugs, devices, tests, vaccines. In other words, no liability if people start dropping like flies once they get the vaccine. No lawsuits, no protection of the population. And it is quite possible, you can bet, for example, that the World Health Organization, which again is a globalist fortress, part of the United Nations, will suggest and recommend that there be some sort of edict or powerful recommendation that all nations of the world implement this vaccine in some sort of A, mass way, and B, mandated. So who knows how this will lay out? Individual governments mandating, a global kind of agreement or treaty signed quickly, whatever. But the answer to the basic question is yes, this is quite possible. And I can tell you that there are two experimental technologies that have never been released before for public use in the pipeline as attempts are being made to develop a COVID-19 vaccine. I've written about these.
Yeah.
One is called DNA technology, the other RNA technology. The DNA technology would permanently alter the genetic makeup of every recipient of the vaccine in unknown ways. RNA vaccine technology faces the risk of inciting what's called an autoimmune reaction, which basically means the body goes to war against itself. So there are the dangers on the horizon if either one of these technologies makes it into public use. Ordinary vaccines already carry tremendous risk, as we saw, for example, in the so-called swine flu epidemic of 2009. It was an experimental vaccine. It caused great harm. It was a disaster. So those are things to understand.
A very good friend of mine who helps out from time to time with the program, the terrific actress, Jean-Anne Crowley, national treasure in Ireland, great lady. She wants to know whether you think, John, that the virus is just the excuse, not the reason. There's also questions about this notion of QAnon, you know, and people being encouraged to stay at home, to go along with the lock-in, but from a very different point of view. You get all sorts of questions about these things, QAnon and Q and Trump and all the rest of it. I don't imagine there's any truth to the notion or the idea that Donald Trump is somehow working deep in the trenches on behalf of the greater good, working for ordinary folks like me and you. But people still seem to believe this stuff, John. What do you think
about
all of that?
I'm not buying it.
No.
I'm not buying the Q stuff, which is basically, you know, I don't pay any attention to it, but from what people send me, it seems to be part of a thread of opinion, which is that Trump understands exactly what's going on. And behind the scenes, he is using the lockdown somehow, because people are at home, to initiate a very deep operation that will, you know, carry out mass arrests of all the bad guys in the deep state, and we will triumph once and for all over the forces of evil and so on. You know, I'm not buying any of that.
No, me neither.
The other question, is the virus the excuse or the reason?
Yeah.
My answer is it's the excuse. Now, this leads us to another very deep question, which is about the initial discovery of the so-called COVID-19 virus in China. And I've watched this happen time and time again with these so-called epidemics. I'll give it to you this way. Most people don't know that within the Centers for Disease Control, there is a section called the Epidemic Intelligence Service, EIS. I call them the medical CIA. There are several thousand of these medical professionals who are specifically trained to go out on several hundred missions a year where there are so-called outbreaks of one kind or another to find the causes. Now, these people are virus hunters. That's what they do. That's what they're trained to do. That's their mindset. They are true believers. And so, let's say they go to some place in China. Forget COVID-19 for a moment. And they find that it's an area where there are lots of workers in factories being paid almost nothing to take apart and recycle old computers. It's a business. And in the process, they're exposed to lead, toxic fumes, acid, all kinds of horrendous things. And they develop serious respiratory problems, and some of them die. Okay? You can be sure that the EIS, the Epidemic Intelligence Service, is going to find a new virus. And they're going to say, it's all about the virus. And this is where it started. That's what they're going to say. So therefore, the virus becomes, at the outset, an incredible cover story to conceal government and corporate crimes that are actually injuring and killing people. What I've just described is, in fact, the origin point of SARS in 2003 in China, where in no time at all, magically, the virus hunters came up with what they said was a never-before-seen coronavirus called SARS. They always managed to find a new virus in lickety-split time.
Yeah.
Boom. And they did the same thing this time in China. The actual steps they took in cooperation with the Chinese biologists, the blow-by-blow procedure that supposedly took place before they made their announcement that they had found this new virus, we are not privy to. We have never been privy to in the history of these epidemics. But I can tell you this, because I've delved into this question deeply. As far as I'm concerned, the closest we could possibly come to actually making a discovery of a new virus would involve, photographs taken by an electron microscope from tissue samples from so-called epidemic patients, hundreds of them, not just two or three, side by side, after the tissue samples have been correctly purified and run through various procedures to get to the electron microscope, which takes the photographs. Then you would be able to see, are we looking at many, many, many virus particles in each photograph? Are the virus particles identical in each photograph? Many, many, many of them. Are these particles that we've never seen before, therefore indicating a new virus? This traditional procedure is now poo-pooed by the modern virologists and molecular biologists who claim they have much better methods, which I deny.
Which you deny. Well, which you've gotten into in a series of articles on this. And you're touching,
yes,
on, you're touching on something here, which we've got about 4 minutes left. You're touching on something here, which is, it's really eye-opening for me. So they can wreck the economy. And I used to do economic reporting for mainstream radio. I understand a lot of the terminology around banking and finance for my sins. I've not got many talents, but I know a little bit about this stuff. They're going to wreck the economy, and they've even been saying, yes, we will have to pay back the loans we are borrowing in due course. We will have to pay them back, the loans that we're going to bail the people out with. In the future, you've described, and it's really shocking this because it's becoming so clear to me now, the excuse will be so easy. Well, it isn't us. It isn't us. It's that bloody virus. We couldn't do anything about it. Don't blame us. It's not our fault that we've got to triple taxes or stop funding vital public services. It's not our fault that we've got to give the banks our forests, our woodlands, our waterways. It's not our fault. It's the virus. It's
exactly,
brilliant, Sean.
Richie.
It's brilliant, Sean, how you've described
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Because, and I've been telling people and writing about this since 1987, saying, look, folks, of all the cartels that exist in the world, the medical cartel is by far the most dangerous long term, because it flies no political partisan banners. It claims to be completely neutral when it comes to politics or economics or anything that looks dangerous. All we care about is the healing. That's all we're doing. We're your friend. And so when the higher levels of this cartel really swing into action, as we're seeing now, again, they trumpet this in the same way. We're just discovering a virus. What do you want from us?
Yeah.
You know, it's neutral. It's not something we're doing. We're reacting to the emergence of this virus. And governments are doing that too. And if we all go broke and it's a new world of poverty and suffering and so forth and so on, and there's a lot to say about that, what the future is going to look like, don't blame us. We just reacted as best we could to the virus.
You mentioned David earlier on, David Icke. When I was living with David in London, we shared an apartment together. My fiance Caroline and David and I lived together for about a year. And you'll remember, because it was the first time I met you at TPV. It was the first time I think you and I spoke on the air. It was David who encouraged me to speak with you. He's very fond of you, John. And David used
and
to,
I of him.
Oh yeah, and I know he knows that. And he said to me at the time, he said, Rich, towards the end of this decade, coming towards 2020, 2021, no, he did say this specifically, those who are behind this agenda, they won't be able to conceal it anymore. It's going to speed up, this agenda. He said the trick is whether people realising it then, because they won't be able to conceal it, whether they'll do anything about it or whether they will capitulate. And he was on the money in saying that, that as we got to 2019, 2020, 2021, he said it'll become so obvious to people, but what will they do then with that info? Will they say enough's enough, or will they do what we've been seeing in recent days, snitch on one another, beg for more lockdown? And I think we've gotten our answer. I'm going to give you the final word in the last 90 seconds we've had. I genuinely want to thank you for coming back again today. You're very busy. Number two, if you want to come back on in the next few weeks to talk about what planet dystopia might look like in the next 5 or 10 years, do that in your own time if you have the time. I just want to say John Rappaport can be read at nomorefakenews.com. Bookmark the website if you haven't done before. The articles are brilliant. Read them and share them around your Twitter, your Instagram, your Facebook. Thanks for today, John. 90 seconds, final word to you, my friend.
Thank you, Richie, so much as always. This show is a beacon in the darkness, believe me.
Very kind.
So what I would say here is what David was saying has come to pass in the form of a very slick campaign. Because what he was essentially saying was, look, if the clampdown that is coming is going to be obvious, more obvious than even now, if it's just going to be a brutal force exerted directly against the populace from sources which are obvious to anybody, then yes, there's going to be considerable resistance. So the implication is this would need to come in a way that bamboozles and befuddles people so that they don't see it for what it is. And here we have it, folks, the virus. This is a way of weaving a story that looks and sounds true to the uninitiated and demands the very consequences that would otherwise be attained by brute force. And that's what's going on.
Thanks again for your time. Whenever you want to do it in the next few weeks, come back on. This is developing anyway, of course, daily, let alone weekly. John Rappaport, nomorefakenews.com. John appears on some other terrific, I'm not saying this is terrific, he appears on terrific radio programs as well. And you can find him if you Google John, put him into YouTube. He honours the independent media with his presence on a daily basis. Check him out. Thanks, my friend. I can't wait to speak again really soon. Thanks for coming on.
Me too, Richie. Thank you so much.
You're a gent, John. Thanks for that. The brilliant John Rappaport live on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Closing the programme. That's all we have time for today. Thanks to you for all your tweets. We answered the questions. Well, John answered the questions that you've been putting to me on Twitter. We'll do it all again tomorrow at 5 o'clock UK time. That's 5 o'clock British summertime tomorrow. Your Richie Allen Radio Show. I'm going to close out with Candy Staten. Don't ask me why. It's just the next tune that appeared in the rundown on the Playout system. So there you are. All right? All right. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Thanks. Look after yourselves and one another. Bye for now. Speak tomorrow. Bye now.